That you all parade about as if you're the divine arbiters of power in the universe.
We are.
You're not. My choices are my own.
Your choices are your own. Good. Let's go with that.
I think this one's gonna fire you up.
The bright lure of freedom diminishes your life's joy in a mad scramble for power.
Precisely. I was, I am, on the verge of acquiring everything I am owed. And when I do, it'll be because I did it. Not because it was supposed to happen, or because you, or the time variance authority, or whatever it is you call yourselves, allowed me to. Honestly, you're pathetic. An irrelevance. A detour. A footnote to my ascent.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the MCU Diaries. It's a podcast dedicated to every Marvel Studios series on Disney+. So sit back, relax, and let's break down Earth's mightiest heroes. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the MCU Diaries. It's been about a month since we've last chatted all together. And let me tell you, I've missed it. I've missed it, especially after that somewhat lackluster series of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I know there are plenty of those who loved it. And, you know, to each their own, I enjoyed it. But even after this first episode of Loki, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is just, it's just nothing in comparison to it. It's just, it's not even in the same stratosphere. It's not even in the same universe as the TVA. And yes, as you can tell from the title of this episode and from the way that we've already been talking, we are chatting Loki, episode 101, Glorious Purpose. And if you can obviously already tell, I loved this episode. I was a huge fan. It is an incredible start to this series. A series that is handwritten by Michael Waldron, who, if you don't know, is from Rick and Morty fame. He was one of the lead writers on that show, along with Dan Harmon, who was the showrunner. So the fact that Michael Waldron is in charge of this series makes a lot of sense, because if you've ever seen Rick and Morty, you know how convoluted and really how funny that show can be. So this is, trust me, this is the way to go, and we have the right person in charge. But before we get into the analysis of this episode and why this episode just rocked my socks, I wanted to let you know that you can subscribe to this podcast if you are not already subscribed to it on Apple Podcast or any podcatcher of your choice. Like if you're listening to this on Facebook or Instagram, you can subscribe to this podcast again on any podcatcher of your choice. And if you want to learn more about the MCU Diaries or any of the shows or projects that we do here at Mary and Blake Media, you can go to maryandblake.com. You can check out all of the great podcasts, including the newly created The Last Kingdom with Mary and Blake. So if you're a fan of the show The Last Kingdom, you can check that podcast out. And of course, the Potterverse, which is dedicated to Harry Potter and all the books, and we're doing chapter by chapter analyses, and obviously Outlander Cast, and all the other great podcasts that we have at maryandblake.com. And if you could too, by the way, if you love the MCU Diaries and you love this podcast, do me a favor and give me a rating and a written review on Apple Podcasts. Not that it makes the show more popular or whatever, but it just helps expose people's opinions about this podcast to others. So who are looking for a way into the MCU, you can help them by saying, hey, this podcast is pretty good. This guy, this nerd, he knows what he's talking about. Or you can say, nope, this show sucks. Don't listen to it. I'd be happy with either one. But of course, I do want you to say that this podcast is good. So a written review, if you could, rating as well, that would be much appreciated. But for now, let's dive right in. Oh, man, I am so excited by Loki, and I can't wait. Let's go.
Hello,
Yes, Loki episode 101, Glorious Purpose. This is a perfect entry into the beginning of this series. This is a perfect entry point into this series. And I think that this episode, it serves as a flawless deconstruction of a character in Loki that we thought we knew to a T. And it's done via a very simple writing tool. And that is exposition and payoff. Like I said, I thought this episode is just incredible. I enjoyed every second of it. And I think, actually, I even enjoyed it more than WandaVision. And you know, as listeners of the MCU Diaries, how much I really did enjoy WandaVision. But why? Why did I love this episode so much? And why does it have such a popular opinion? Why do so many people love Loki as of right now? Like the series Loki. And I, by the way, I recognize this is going to get a little confusing for the listener, for you, and for those of you who are reading these articles. I don't have the benefit of a written word in italics when I'm talking about the series as opposed to the character. So I will do my best to make sure I mention the word character or series after the word Loki to the best of my ability. But why? Why do I love this episode of Loki? And why do I think Loki, the series, is getting such high praise? Well, when it comes to these MCU shows on Disney Plus, So far, I think even including The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, what matters most to me, and I suspect what matters most to you, and definitely, well, at least hopefully, what matters most to Marvel Studios, is character. And in this case, what are we learning about Loki the character? And how do the events of Loki the series inform Loki the character's presence within the MCU writ large? After 23 films, two Disney Plus series, I care about these characters, and I specifically care a lot about Loki. Like in WandaVision, though, we finally have a chance to explore the people behind the actions which take place in these giant tentpole extravaganzas. In this case, again, it's Loki the character. And the perfect example of this exploration is when Owen Wilson's TVA agent, Mobius, M. Mobius, simply asks Loki, "Do you like to hurt people?" Could you ever imagine Thor or, say, Tony Stark sitting down with Loki in one of these Avengers films and asking him, "Do you like to hurt people?" There's no chance. I cannot see that at all. And because of that, the reason why that exists is that there is just neither the time and nor the bandwidth to explore that kind of nuance and what we would consider to be an uber villain, that is Loki, in any of these MCU films. This series, again, like WandaVision, it makes it abundantly clear that this nuance, the one we just talked about, is exactly the kind of ride for which we are in definite store. And why do we know this? What about this episode tells you this? This entire episode is actually just one giant therapy session for Loki. I mean, yeah, we got some other stuff involved in there too. We got some fun action and we got some explanation and everything, but it's mainly a therapy session for Loki. How he must come to accept how his actions led to his mother's death. How he really had no tactile plan for ruling Midgard, which, of course, is Earth. Or how he must face the existential dilemma that his glorious purpose, the one he mentions in Avengers and the one that he mentions at the beginning of this episode, that glorious purpose, well, eventually it leads to nothing. Nothing but his neck being snapped by a giant purple alien who actually bankrolled his Midgard takeover from the beginning. And yes, this all sounds well and good, and it is good, but the question still remains, why? Why is this such a triumphant starting point for Loki, the series? Well, I'll tell you. Because we learn more about Loki the character. A character, by the way, we have come to love. And it's done in a very specific fashion in this episode. It's done with the clever use of exposition and payoff. Well, here's the big question, right? What is exposition? Exposition is when the film or the show that you're watching, it stops engaging its plot. It stops telling you what, it stops showing you what is going on. And it does this to inform you, the viewer, what you are actually seeing on screen. Instead of showing you its story, it's now telling you a functional aspect of its story so you can understand the context for the remainder of the narrative. As a matter of fact, what I just did right there, that is exposition. I'm telling you exactly what exposition means. That means I have to stop the narrative of what I'm trying to go over in Loki and tell you this is exposition. This is what it means. So you have an understanding of what exposition means going forward when we reference it as this episode continues. That is exposition. This tool is one that every writer uses because sometimes you can't get information from your story. It has to bring you, it has to tell you exactly what is happening sometimes. It has to give you information so you understand its story. But it is also a dangerous tool because people know when they're being talked at. And in the end, when you're writing a story, exposition can be confusing, it can be frustrating, and it can be downright boring. Most of you have listened to this to these episodes before, and you know I love to reference Robert McKee, an author, who wrote this book called Story. And Robert McKee writes the following about exposition. He says, if at a certain point in the telling a piece of exposition must be known or the audience wouldn't be able to follow, create the desire to know by arousing curiosity. With a hunger for information, even the most complicated set of dramatized facts will pass smoothly into understanding. Now, if that doesn't make any sense to you, I will help explain it. In other words, you have to inform your audience information they wouldn't or can't normally get from the immediate story you're telling. Then you must exposit to catch them up. You have to tell them all the information that they need. The trick, though, Mr. Potter, is to exposit in an interesting fashion so as not to lose the momentum of your story. Exemplary instances of interesting exposition are ones that you are well aware of. That is Mr. DNA from Jurassic Park. Dino DNA. That whole sequence, that is exposition. The tale of the three brothers in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1. That is exposition. And, of course, all of the construct scenes from The Matrix, when Morpheus is explaining to Neo what the Matrix is and how people are all batteries to the computers, that is exposition. So now that we have an understanding of what exposition is, let's actually stick with the comparisons actually to the Matrix, because I believe the two scenarios in the Matrix and Loki, the series, are relatively comparable. For example, the two main characters, Neo and Loki, are ejected from their world into a brand new plane of existence. And we, the audience, need to learn as much about those new planes of existence as quickly and as efficiently as the main characters so we can understand each story respectively. I think it's an apropos comparison. Despite being comprised of mostly exposition in its storytelling, The Matrix is arguably one of the top 15, maybe top 10 films ever made. And I will not hear an argument against that. But it does this, it's able to be one of the top 10 or 15 films ever made because it generates curiosity in the beginning of its story. It defines its rules in the middle with striking visuals and inventive action, and revealing a truer sense of its main character, Neo, by the end of the film. We understand who Neo is because of the events of the film. While it may not be as groundbreaking as The Matrix, Loki, the series, follows a similar structure to The Matrix. And I think that is why it is such an effective beginning to this show. After catching us up to date by showing us the events of Avengers Endgame, the time heist, if you will, and how that serves as a sort of prologue to Loki, the series, the story piques our curiosity in a compelling fashion by literally dumping Loki, the character, just in the middle of the Gobi Desert. There it is. Boom. Done. We get an immediate satisfaction of what happened to Loki right after the events of Avengers Endgame. And our first shot, actually, after the prologue, is a drip of water hanging off of a rock, which reflects a bug crawling across the sand. Notice, though, that the reflection is upside down and warped through the lens of the water. This is the show telling you in a visual manner that it's about to turn Loki, the character, and the MCU as you understand it, completely upside down through a lens of a totally new existence. One that is just as foreign as water is to desert. Speaking of the desert, though, Loki does land in the desert alone, and he is unable to communicate to the other characters that surround him. But he still tries to maintain his superiority by standing on a nearby rock and proclaiming, "I am Loki of Asgard, and I am burdened with glorious purpose." Once again, building off of his actions in Avengers, the first film. But that bravado, everything that he has, it's actually interrupted by TVA agents, Time Variance Authority agents, who appear out of some spectral doorway, and those agents then define Loki's actions as nothing more than a standard sequence violation. What the hell does that mean? Agent B-15, by the way, continues to assess the situation by saying the branch is growing at a stable rate and slope in a variant identified. By the way, on behalf of the Time Variance Authority, I hereby arrest you, Loki, for crimes against the sacred timeline. Notice that it's not for killing thousands of people in New York or, you know, invading Earth with an alien army. Oh, no. It's for crimes against the sacred timeline. What is happening? Our curiosity is being piqued. Then it's topped off by a fun sequence where Loki just gets whooped across the face with some kind of stick in 1/16th speed, that he feels all of that pain, by the way, while the agent, B-15, continues in normal speed, putting some kind of collar on his neck. And then the other agents place this little object on the ground with some stuff in it to, as they say, reset the timeline. What? Wow. That is already a lot. And we're only 2 minutes into the actual story. And this all works because it's a perfect setup for everything that is about to come. Like The Matrix, when you hear the opening conversation, or when you have Trinity running away from the FBI agents and they have these magical powers, and she opens a phone door and she dials a number and she disappears in the phone as a truck rams through the payphone booth. You're like, what? How does all of this work? And you are having the same exact experience with Loki. It is a perfect setup because the TVA is powerful. It controls timelines. It has soldiers, apparently, who are more powerful than Loki. Loki is completely alone and with none of the bravado that we already talked about that he usually instills to have fear in his counterparts. What we see here is that in comparison to the TVA, Loki, the man who invaded Earth with an alien army, he is weak. He is defenseless. And he is utterly powerless. Why? That is an incredible beginning. But it even continues going further. Loki is then brought to an overtly 70s-style design of the TVA offices. And the Tesseract, which we know is an Infinity Stone, is treated as nothing more than a minute piece of evidence that can be tossed aside like it was nothing more than just a belt buckle found at some crime scene. Loki's clothes get burned off by some machine, and he's put into a prison suit. He has to sign for every word that he's ever said in what is truly a genius sequence. And then he must consider if he's actually a robot before he is scanned and potentially eviscerated by said scanner. Then we're introduced to the incredibly effective Miss Minutes, who explains the entire timeline logic with the timekeepers. Notice, by the way, if you go back to Mr. DNA, the Dino DNA sequence from Jurassic Park, notice the extreme similarity to how Miss Minutes is used. And then Loki is then shown how he can be obliterated if he doesn't take his ticket. If he doesn't follow this bureaucracy, he can be just vaporized from existence. Then we have the opening titles. Oh. Oh. This entire introduction is outstanding. It's outstanding because we understand Loki, the character, the emotional connections that he has, how he is powerless in the TVA, the stakes of what is happening. We are provided an inroad to how somewhat the world works with the TVA, but we are left with enough questions about the timekeepers and how the function of the TVA performs to actually want us to keep coming back for more. Once those titles hit, we are in this position of saying, what the hell happened? I need to figure this out. It reminds me of Lewis Black. Let's figure it out! You know, that is exactly how I felt once those titles hit. The first half of this episode actually continues to bombard us with more questions that we are asking ourselves from before the title sequence. We get questions like, who are the timekeepers? Who is Mobius? What is the deal with France in 1549? How does all of this work? Is the TVA an illusion? What is the Nightmare Division? Where does the TVA exist? How does the collar on Loki work? Why does Loki have to plead guilty in some court to some judge? What, by the way, is a dangerous variant? And if Loki is a little pussycat, as Mobius says to him, in comparison to those dangerous variants that Mobius hunts down, why is Mobius so interested in using Loki as his own personal Hannibal Lecter? So on and so on and so on. Questions keep ramping up through the first interview with Loki until he finally stands up in frustration and, by the way, gets put back in his seat. Then he stands up again and he tries to grasp onto whatever inkling of control he may yet retain in the TVA by saying this.
What makes Loki tick?
I know what this place is.
What is it?
It's an illusion. It's a cruel, elaborate trick conjured by the weak to inspire fear, a desperate attempt at control.
I want you to remember this line, because this line is very important to the payoff that happens at the end of this episode. Like in The Matrix, after this sequence, Loki must be shown how much power the TVA wields. Neo can't be told about The Matrix. He must see it for himself. Loki must have the same experience. And he must be shown how everything he has done, up until stealing the Tesseract, has been allowed because the TVA have allowed him to do so. Everything he has done. And it's at this point we're introduced to what is essentially a PowerPoint presentation of Loki's greatest hits, including, again, how he bound the greatness of the Avengers together and essentially, indirectly, caused the death of his mother. And for the first time in the history of his character, after we see the experience with his mother, when Freya says to him, "Loki, you are so perceptive except against yourself." For the first time, we see a subdued Loki. For the first time ever. And Loki begins to understand at this moment that he might be in over his head. "What is this place?" Loki asks in a seemingly defeated fashion. Of course, still hanging on to the notion as being the god of the mischief, however, Loki does try a last-ditch effort. He is trying his best to hold on to his control. It's his last attempt to be who he is by trying to steal the controller for the timey-wimey collar that, you know, that controller from Mobius. He tries to steal it, and he does. And he escapes to find the Tesseract and goes full on, just does whatever he can to get the hell out of Dodge. This is important because Loki can't accept his futility. And he refuses to believe the amount of power the TVA wields over him. More questions, more stalling, more ambiguity. How does all of this work? And before it becomes too much, though, before it becomes too frustrating, head writer Michael Waldron, as we talked about earlier, he makes the astute choice to finally, at this point, give some answers after all the questions, after all the false starts, and again, after the intentional ambiguity of the beginning of this episode. At this point, Loki finds the Tesseract among all these other pieces of evidence. But it's not just evidence as we know it. What we're seeing are Infinity Stones. And we get to see Tom Hiddleston as Loki at his very best when Loki finally realizes that he has no power here in the TVA. That the Infinity Stones has no power in the TVA. They're just paperweights. They're paperweights for a bunch of nerd boys who don't even know what fish are. Loki, the series, is also at its very best here because there's no more talk, there's no more explanation, no more info dumps, no more questions. It uses its visuals, it's established in our preconceived notions on how powerful the Infinity Stones are supposed to be. And it lets Hiddleston's supreme acting, as well as the score. By the way, the score from Natalie Holt, whew, it lets Hiddleston and the score do the talking for it. Tom Hiddleston's look of bewilderment and shock as he walks into the middle of the office space, by the way, holding the Tesseract as the paperweight it really is in this space, it emphasizes one major point. The Tesseract is useless. Loki's entire pursuit of power for his whole life, it's useless in the TVA. He and the Tesseract are meaningless while everyone around him just goes about their daily business with no care about him at all. And it's a stark contrast to how Loki proclaims himself in the beginning of this episode. No. He is not burdened with glorious purpose. In the TVA, he has no purpose. Sure, Loki tries to escape one more time, and it all plays off as fun and games, especially as the exposition is embedded deeply into the action that proceeds between Loki and B-15 when he's making her disappear and reappear. But that's what it is at this point. It's fun and games. Because instead of continuing to teach us about its guidelines or expanding the rules which dictate the TVA, the action that we're watching simply reasserts the exposition already accomplished earlier in this episode. So it makes sense to us when we see Loki control the collar he is attached to Agent B-15 and how he can manipulate her through time. We get it. When Loki is eventually threatened with the Death Sticks, the one that Mobius is holding, he says there's nowhere else to run, we can appreciate what will happen to him if he doesn't comply because we've already seen one annoying dink of a guy get just eviscerated into nothingness earlier in the episode. And when we see the TVA screen start to play Loki's life ahead of him, we empathize with his tears as he sees his reconciliation with his brother, his father, and his eventual death. He laughs because he finally knows the answer to the question he asked earlier in this episode. Is this the greatest power in the universe? I began this essay, though, stating that not only did the show succeed because of all of its exquisite use of exposition, but also because of its payoff. We've talked about exposition. What, then, is payoff? Payoff is when you set something up with exposition, and then you give an emotional catharsis at the end. Throughout this episode, Loki is treated as a buffoon, because that's exactly what he is in the TVA. Remember that this is actually the Loki right after he is caught in the first Avengers film, when he is probably at his most arrogant and insufferable. This is not the Loki we saw in Thor Ragnarok or Avengers and Infinity Wars. He hasn't had the emotional arc that Loki has had yet. So to borrow a quote from Nick Fury, Loki is the proverbial ant who has a quarrel with a boot, but the boot just treats him like an ant. And that, in this episode, is the point. This doesn't denigrate his character or undersell his power on Earth, but rather it reaffirms how ineffectual and vulnerable Loki is in the realm of the TVA. To the TVA, Loki is an ant. And through the exposition, we have already have an incredible payoff at the end of this episode when Loki realizes, well, he can't go back to his timeline. And he recontextualizes the line you had to remember from earlier in this episode.
I can't go back, can I? Back to my timeline. I don't enjoy hurting people. I don't enjoy it. I do it because I have to, because I've had to.
Okay, explain that to me.
Because it's part of the illusion. It's the cruel, elaborate trick conjured by the weak to inspire fear.
The desperate play for control.
You do know yourself.
A villain.
That's not how I see it.
That right there is the emotional payoff. Loki can recontextualize his own thoughts against the TVA and put them towards himself. Now, do I believe it? I don't know. That's a really good question. But in terms of the writing and the storytelling, this is incredible. And the only way we can understand this payoff is through the exposition, through all the rules and all the goings on of the episode that just happened. Like Neo's journey in The Matrix, Loki generates curiosity in the beginning of this episode. It defines its rules in the middle with striking visuals and inventive action, i.e. the collar and all of the stuff that you see in the TVA offices, and also the revelation about the Infinity Stones. And we honestly believe this payoff for all of this exposition when Loki the character reveals a truer sense of himself by the end of the episode, when he says, I don't enjoy hurting people. Though, it's not done there. The comparison to The Matrix still is valid because, well, like at the tease at the end of The Matrix, when Neo calls the computers on the phone and tells them that he is coming for them, well, that was an expert tease, and Loki also provides an expert tease Mobius needs Loki because the dangerous variant he is hunting, it is actually Loki. Now we want to know more. Now we want to continue. We need more answers. And all of this is the reason why Loki, episode 101, Glorious Purpose, is incredible. Time for Apropos of Nothing for Loki, episode 101, Glorious Purpose. Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson have incredible chemistry together, especially as Owen Wilson plays the G. Willikers straight man of the pairing of the two. It's such a great contrast of Hiddleston's Shakespearean, you know, bravado in comparison to just the everyman agent Mobius. Really excellent pairing. And it continues with lines like, "You're really good at metaphors. It makes you sound really smart." Hiddleston says, "I am smart." Like, such a great interaction. All of them. This is gold. Natalie Holt's score is by far the best score from any of the Disney Plus series yet, by far. And I would actually argue it's among the best in the MCU overall. It is really great. Another, obviously, great couple of scores from the MCU. First one being Avengers Endgame. Also, Black Panther by Ludwig Göransson. Amazing stuff. And then also, an underrated piece of scoring is Doctor Strange from Michael Giacchino. Go listen to Doctor Strange. There's some really good stuff there. One of the timekeepers is apparently referring to Kang the Conqueror. I will leave that there and at that because that character, Kang the Conqueror, who is apparently one of the timekeepers, is actually supposed to be played by Jonathan Majors in the upcoming Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. So I will keep that spoiler-free here, but it is interesting that they've acknowledged Kang the Conqueror. There's also apparently a reference to Peggy Carter in this episode, who appears actually to be brought in and arrested by a TVA agent in the background while Loki is running around in the TVA offices. Now, there is no confirmation that it is Peggy Carter. That, of course, if you don't remember, that is the true love of Steve Rogers, Captain America. And the last time we saw both of them is when Steve Rogers had gone back into his own timeline and just stayed in the 50s to be with Peggy and have their final dance. I wonder if Steve Rogers maybe was arrested by the TVA for his foray into another timeline. Maybe. I don't know. But it's interesting to note that there is a woman in the background who walks in and looks exactly like Peggy Carter in the distance. The two armies fighting in Miss Minutes' cartoon, they appear to be the Kree, who you will remember from Captain Marvel, and the Wakandans. Food for thought. According to Miss Minutes, variants like Loki cause Nexus events, or unauthorized breaches for the sacred timeline. By the way, that word Nexus should sound familiar because it was used in WandaVision's antidepressant commercial. In episode, I think it was 7. And Wanda is referred to as a Nexus being. So keep that in mind. Miss Minutes also says that there is a Nexus event that could, if it's unchecked, it could branch and lead to madness, resulting in a multiversal war. I don't think it's a coincidence that Wanda heard her children's voices at the end of WandaVision, and that Wanda will be the co-lead of the upcoming Doctor Strange film, which happens to be titled Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. By the way, having Loki, the character, be D.B. Cooper in this universe because he lost a bet to Thor is, once again, a stroke of genius. If you haven't done so already, take a minute and go watch The Mystery of D.B. Cooper, a documentary on HBO Max. I watched it unrelated to this episode of television, but It is an incredible documentary. Go check it out. You're going to want to watch it. The logic in the time travel here in Loki, I think, is still a little wonky. But I don't care. As we are wont to say here in Mary and Blake Media, stats are for nerds. Ultimately, Ravenna the Judge gives us a catch-all reasoning. The Avengers could time travel because that was what was supposed to happen according to the sacred timeline. No timelines can pop up without approval. So whatever exists in our sacred timeline is approved by the timekeepers. So whatever happens, it's okay because the timekeepers allow it. And the ones that they don't allow get purged. Like what we saw when Loki took the Tesseract and went to the desert. You saw that little machine go back and reset the timeline. There's some discussion here about the sacred timeline. Is there one timeline or are there multiple timelines that exist within the sacred timeline? Are there multiple timelines that the timekeepers are allowing? Like, is it a thread? Is it just a solid line? There's, I think, some confusion here, and that's why it's still a little wonky. But again, I don't care because all I care about is Loki and what is happening to this character. Note, by the way, that the TVA recognizes Loki as Loki Laufeyson, not Odinson, which is a fun callback to Loki's true origins, which were discovered in the first Thor film. And also note that when Loki is ejected into the Gobi Desert, it's almost a shot-for-shot remake of how Iron Man lands in the desert and the first Iron Man after escaping the cave. That will do it for this episode of the MCU Diaries. Let's close this bad boy out, shall we? Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the MCU Diaries and spend a good 41, 42 minutes with me while we're here. I appreciate you taking the time to listen and engage with me and all the stuff that is going on in the MCU and breaking down this character, Loki, and this series, Loki. This is going to be an interesting one, ladies and gentlemen. This show... Kevin Feige has said that this is going to have the most impact on the MCU out of any of the Disney Plus series, and you can already see how and why, because of the timekeepers, the timeline, the sacred timeline, how things can be reset, and what Loki is going to be doing. I loved it. I think it's awesome. I can't wait to keep going. So, if you want to keep going with me, please go to maryandblake.com where you can check out this podcast and actually this article. It's actually written. Everything that is discussed here is written at maryandblake.com. Of course, there are some differences, but the DNA is still there. So if you want to get a little bit more detail and you want to see the examples of Mr. DNA, or you want to see the example of the Tale of the Three Brothers from Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, and of course the amazing construct scenes from The Matrix that will help give you some more information on exposition, what it is, and why people use it. You can see all that at the article. I'll have the link in the show notes here that you can just, if you're listening and you want to see it, you can just click the article and just check it out right then and there. And of course, also, if you want to help support the MCU Diaries and Mary and Blake Media in general, we're just a mom and pop shop, man. We are an independent podcast company. We are not supported or helped in any way by these large podcast companies that exist out there. We're independent. So if you want to continue to help us create fun and engaging podcasts like this, go to jointhenerdclan.com and become an official Nerd Clan member where you get some amazing benefits like book clubs and early access to all these podcast episodes, premium podcasts like Keep Calm and Crown On, which is a podcast dedicated to the Crown, Rise Up, which is a podcast dedicated to Hamilton, and many, many, many more things like free swag and a lot of great stuff going on over there. And of course, the community too. The community at the Nerd Clan is just the best. You don't want to miss out on that. You get to talk about all the great stuff that you'd love. And lastly, for a free resource, go to Facebook and join the Mary and Blake Facebook group. You get everything that Mary and I do all in one space at Mary and Blake Facebook group. That is all. That too is a fun community. All the nerds getting together, talking about everything that they love to talk about, whether it is the MCU or Outlander or just books or movies that they love and talking. As a matter of fact, I had a giant post about Man of Steel the other day that I really liked, and there was a huge discussion about it. So go there, Mary and Blake Facebook group. As for now, my name is Blake, and I'll see you next episode.